will talk this hour with a guest who says more must be done to save the arts and to encourage more people to enjoy and participate in the arts. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 9 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Wednesday, October 31st. We'll wonder if you love the arts, the visual arts in particular. Are we losing our appreciation of the fine arts? And what do you think needs to be done to save them? Do you think enough's being done to teach art and art history in our public schools and universities? Should government funding of the arts be a priority today? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We are very happy to have with us Camille Paglia. She is Professor of Humanities and Media Studies at the University of the Arts in Philadelphia. She is the author of many books, including her very latest, Glittering Images, A Journey Through Art from Egypt to Star Wars. And she joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
Thank you so much for being with us. Now, I read that you wrote this book because you were, or at least you were inspired to write the book because of the open animosity toward the arts and artists that you heard on AM talk radio. What were you hearing?
Yes. I've been a career teacher at art schools for 40 years now, and I'm also a great fan of popular culture and, of, in particular, AM talk radio. I'm a registered Democrat, so I am unhappy that there aren't more liberal hosts that have succeeded in that, to me, very populist medium of rather abrasive talk radio. For the last 20 years, I have been hearing a disrespect for art and artists, a mockery of artists, particularly of those who are abstract painters. And a lot of this was due to that unfortunate series of controversies over sacrilegious art from the late 80s into the 90s, the most famous example being Andre Serrano's Piss Christ.
Mm-hmm.
I felt it was necessary to write this book, which took 5 years, to reach both ends of the political spectrum. On the one hand, I want to address conservatives directly and tell them no matter what they may think of the present state of the art world, which frankly I agree with they have an obligation to inform themselves about the history of art and to introduce their children to the history of art. So I've written this handbook as concise as I could to cross these 3,000 years of the history of styles in Western art to make that easier. On the other hand, I'm also addressing the art world and saying that there is a snobbery, an elitism, a materialism, a derivativeness, and I'm particularly critical of the continual use of shock effects in art. I feel that is over. The avant-garde, I say in this book, is over. The last truly avant-garde works were, in my view, those of Robert Mapplethorpe, his wonderful photographs in the late 1970s of the gay underworld in New York. And I feel that that this continual stress on shock and equating it with originality is producing the low opinion that mainstream Americans have of art.
Right. So, what message might you have for the public radio listener? We're an NPR affiliate.
Well, what I'm saying is that a greater effort has to be made to introduce young people to the history of art. Parents are bankrupting themselves, sending their kids to college, imagining that they're getting a wonderful introduction to the humanities and so on. That's actually not what's happening. I am extremely critical of the state of the humanities in the U.S. I feel, you know, not only that pointless veering toward post-structuralism and post-modernism from the 1970s, 70s on, but the present thing, which is called cultural studies, which is a complete ahistorical mess. Our students are emerging from the best schools with no sense whatever of chronology. Glittering Images is chronological. We follow this long history of art. I believe there is order in meaning in history, which is considered quite unfashionable to say these days, and I'm afraid. But kids today and adults are swamped with there's a kind of chaos of visual clutter coming at us from every direction, from Twitter and from our computer screens and from insanely fast edited commercials on TV, etc. I think that our eyes are becoming deadened. The brain has to shut down in some way in order to process this pointless barrage every day. What I'm saying is that it's possible to retrain the eye in almost a spiritual way by focusing on great works of art. And in this book, my dream was to have full-page color illustrations of great works of art, then in very short chapters introducing each period, each artist, each style to the reader, and then to keep on moving on to get this sense of flow through the history of art. So I have many known works in this book, but also obscure works, such as those of a forgotten African-American painter of the 1920s and 30s whose whole life was spent in Indianapolis, John Wesley Hardrick.
Yeah, make the case why you think these art classes should be required, mandatory for college.
Yes, well, not just college. I am saying that what we call art classes in primary school are not that. They're just do-it-yourself occasions with construction paper and glue pots to express the inner creativity of children. I'm saying we need real introduction to art history at the primary school level, and then also for that to be at the college level. There are art history courses in colleges, but they're not required. And this is the tragic. The great art history survey courses are slowly being abandoned. Those great courses that went over two semesters from cave art all the way down to modernism. Because today's academics are not being trained in that way to see and to speak over such a long historical period. In fact, they're told the opposite. They're told that history is random, okay, and therefore any course can consist of just a few selected things here and there without giving students any sense of the broader perspective of history.
The arts classes are taking a back seat, especially today, because we have such a focus on math and science?
Well, no, I would say that the humanities courses are still quite popular, but we have a kind of cafeteria style now. Decades ago, the idea of any core curriculum was abandoned. This happened in the 1970s for good reasons, the period of identity politics, when it was felt that the Western tradition is insufficient the way it had been taught, and that it needed to be amplified by reference to African-American studies, to women's studies, the gay studies, Chicano studies. All these things were laudable, but what happened was a further fracturing of the academic curriculum, so that basically you go to college and you're told you can pick this, this, and this, just from this area and that area. There's a complete cowardice on the part of most universities in proposing a certain core body of knowledge. Now, I believe that the true identity politics of the and multiculturalism of the 1970s should have been the broadening of our education to world culture, and not this further fragmentation down into these small areas. The end result is that students are emerging from college with no sense whatever of history. I'm encountering these people with the finest degrees in the media, for example, in New York, and their minds are chaotic because they have never been given the structure, this sense of the movements of time, the development of the humanities over 3,000 years.
Hey, you describe yourself politically. You said you were a registered Democrat, but I read you consider yourself more of a libertarian.
Yes.
And I'm wondering how you jive that with your call for you want the government to spend money on the arts.
Yes, correct. What I'm saying is that the government should not be in the business of giving grants to individual artists. That is where things started to go wrong. Okay, in the way the National Endowment for the Arts was being run before. I think that there should be a massive increase in government funding of the arts, but it should be given to the communities for them to distribute as they see fit. We particularly need support for forms like dance. dance. Dance will die without adequate rehearsal space and without that continuity from teacher to student. As a career teacher in art schools for 40 years, I am very committed to dance. And with a terrible rise in rental, rates for properties in cities coast to coast, dance is really suffering. But here's the point: the art world has been negligent. The art world has been irresponsible in allowing its image to be formed by these third and fourth rate works of sacrilegious art like Piss Christ. Okay, the art world is proud of that, proud of these silly and derivative gestures. Right? Then it has to take moral responsibility for the low opinion that most mainstream Americans have toward the arts. Because you see, we're not like Europe. We don't have thousands of years of art built up in our museums and in our streets and so on. We are a young nation. The arts have never taken firm root here. A practical, utilitarian people. So the case for the arts must be made. I'm trying, in Glittering Images, I'm saying to conservatives, look, here is the true history of art. It is spiritual. There is a spiritual dimension to art, and there's a spirituality to the artistic mission. Now, in saying that, okay, I'm already going against what is the current mode in very cynical being put out by humanities professors in the major universities. They look at art in this very critical way. They deconstruct it, looking for its hidden power plays, its hidden racism and sexism and homophobia and so on. So the humanities professors themselves are guilty also of murdering art.
Our guest is a humanities professor. She is Camille Paglia. She is a professor of humanities and media studies at the University of the Arts in Philadelphia. She is the author of many books. She is a well-known cultural critic, and her latest book is Glittering Images, A Journey Through Art from Egypt to Star Wars. And we're talking about what can be done to save the fine arts. And we wonder what you think. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Tomorrow at this time, I'll be talking with language expert Richard Lederer. But we're not going to be talking about words. We're going to be talking about presidents. We'll talk about presidential trivia coming up tomorrow with Richard Lederer. Right now, we are talking about the arts and what can be done to save the arts. And we're welcoming your input, your questions, 1-800-642-1234. Do you think enough is being done to teach art or art history in our public schools and universities? Should government funding of the arts be a priority today? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our guest is Camille Paglia. She is a professor of humanities and media studies at the University of the Arts in Philadelphia and author of Glittering Images. Our lines are full. Our first caller is Nancy in Duluth. Hi, Nancy.
Hi. Number one, I really think that the government should support the arts. Number two, I have noticed a decline in the presentation of art, so I do hold the artist in part responsible for this abhorrent method of producing art that's trash, actually, and so it affects the public image. And I'm old now. I'm 69 years old, and I went to school. I went to college at a time when they still taught art. In fact, I took a class called 20th Century Thought, which was taught by four teachers. It was a collaborative course: English, art, philosophy, and music.
Nancy, I don't mean to interrupt, but why do you think there's been this decline in the presentation of art?
Because I think people are focused on something else. Computers, for instance. Computers are so much more important than art. And art has never, in my 69-odd years, been all that important in our schools. Mm-hmm. Unless, of course, you can afford to go to a private school, a fine art school.
Let's get Professor Paglia in on this.
I loved what Nancy was saying about the collaborative course that she had experienced. This interdisciplinary sort of teaching where you've got art and you know philosophy and music. This is exactly what I think was the real aim of the 1960s of my generation, and somehow it's been lost, and we've gone off into this kind of cynical way of talking about the arts. But I think she's quite right. There's now a kind of contentment with trash or trashy gestures, okay, made by an art world that's really run out of ideas. As a teacher at art school, I've seen that the fields, for example, of industrial design are booming. My industrial designers have amazing minds. My animation majors are phenomenal. The web designers, right? But the genres, the fine arts, have slowly been losing creative energy. I think it's a real crisis.
Are they losing that creative energy because computers are more important?
Yes, correct. We're moving into a highly technological age. I would never want to set back the movement of culture. I was one of the very first to write, you know, for web journalism. I was in the very first issue of Salon.com back in 1995, and been a columnist there for years. I adore the web. I adore technological forms of expression. However, there's no doubt that young people's primary aesthetic experiences right now are coming from their personal handheld devices. And this is industrial design. Okay, this is not art. No matter how beautiful and adapted to you your cell phone is, there is no spiritual message coming from a cell phone.
Can't, though, this technology also make art and art history more accessible to people in terms of, you know, looking at this art on our iPads?
Absolutely. I would hope so. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is what I'm calling for. That's why I've written this book, in order, okay, to help people to get onto the web and find these images. I say in the introduction, okay, that whatever reference I make in the book to pictures or artists that are not in the book, you can go immediately, you know, to Google Images and find it. So that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying mm-hmm. to say you must make the effort, however. If you do not make the effort, you will remain ignorant of art.
Thank you very much, Nancy, for calling. We move on now to Marianne in Superior. Hi, Marianne.
Good morning. I'd like to mention to you folks what we're doing up in Superior at our local library. We have a children's librarian that a couple of years ago, she was really concerned about the arts and in particular the artists. She felt that so oftentimes they didn't have a place where other artists would come together and where they could talk with other ones, visit, find out about the variety of disciplines. So she set up a venue at our library. It usually is in February, 2 years ago, with the theme was Love Your Local Artist. And that first year, we had 80 people that came in to talk with the artists, to see the variety of disciplines. Last year, the word got around, and we had 240 guests along with the local artists. And we were watching the artists not only speaking to each other, and there were a variety of ages, but we also noticed the community asking all kinds of questions about their discipline. So we're going to do it again. But our children's librarian saw a need, and she was determined that it was going to be changed, that the arts were going to be more and more visible in our community.
Well, good for her. Thank you, Marianne. What do you think of Love Your Local Artist?
I love what Marianne is saying. This is exactly what is needed for artists to get out of their ghettos, stop speaking just to each other and to the gallery owners and to other people who already are fans of art. There should be much more community outreach and for the mainstream Americans to understand what the arts are and how they're conducted. I think it's very important for citizens to see that artists actually work, okay, with materials. There's a process. It's not just these, you know, gimmicky shock gestures coming out of nowhere. I think this is wonderful, and we definitely need something like this on a national level.
You know, what more do you want the public schools to be doing, Professor? You mentioned, you know, construction paper projects aren't enough, or the occasional field trip to the museum. What should our schools be doing?
Well, I think there should be formal art history at the primary school level as early as possible for images to be presented to students and for the teachers to be talking about the meaning of the images, the lives of the artists. I mean, it's absolutely absurd that we have this enormous vacuum, okay, in terms of the teaching of art history at the primary school level. And now it could be that eventually there should be visual aids for this provided, you know, to elementary school teachers. But this should be absolutely basic. We are never going to get good art or original art again if there's not some effort to incorporate art history into the basic curriculum.
Yeah, and to those who say, big deal if we don't get any more good art from now on?
Well, a culture is remembered by its art. Political power is evanescent. It is transient. Nothing is left of that. The only thing that does survive from any culture is its arts.
We are talking about the arts and what's wrong today and what needs to be done to save the arts. And we're welcoming your thoughts and questions at 1-800-642-1234 send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is Camille Paglia. She is author of Glittering Images, A Journey Through Art from Egypt to Star Wars. And our next caller is Pete in Milwaukee. Hi, Pete.
Well, hello. How you doing, Joy? And Professor, nice to talk with you.
Hi, Pete.
Hi. I wanted to just bring up, my mom was an art student in college. My uncle was a dance professor at the Art Institute of Chicago for many years. So I got exposed to quite a bit of the humanities as a kid, and I'm taking on a little bit of teaching my own kids about that sort of thing with the help from my mom. And we just recently purchased an old game, and you might remember this game, Professor, called Masterpiece, and it came out back in the early 70s.
Yes.
And we're playing that, and the kids are getting some exposure to the great master impressionists and things like that. And I think if a lot of parents would try to take their kids to an art museum and learn a little bit of something about it on their own, I think it might be... It'd be great to have art education in the schools, but I think parents need to try to take it on a little bit on their own and get some help from some of these librarians, like the previous caller was talking about, that has some exposure to it. Now, I'll let you just
Wait, before you go, Pete. Before you go, did you have Masterpiece from back in the 70s in your attic, or is it still on the market?
Well, actually, what we had to do, the game is discontinued. It's been out of circulation since the early 70s, and we had a copy of the game, and it was long lost, and I found another copy on eBay, and we picked it up.
So bring back Masterpiece, Professor Paglia.
Very interesting. Now, Pete raises a very important point, parental responsibility. Mm-hmm. Okay, parents cannot keep ceding to schools and to government programs, this responsibility of educating their children. Now, my parents, you know, had no money. My father was the only member of his large blended family of 10, Italian immigrant family, to go to college. He went to the local public college back in the late 1940s. I was born in this gritty industrial town of Endicott, New York. But my parents made sure there were books in the house. And my earliest impressions about art came from a book by Gombrich called A History of Art. It made an enormous impression on me. This is what I'm trying to do with Glittering Images, is to provide a very handy and concise introduction to the arts with beautiful pictures that could attract children before they even know how to read. I mean, I was paging through this book at home before I even got to kindergarten. And you don't even have to have money to buy books. Parents can go to a library and inform themselves about the section of art books. Bring some books home. Just page through with your children. So again, I think Pete is so right. Parental responsibility is at the heart of this.
Thank you, Pete. Now we go to Camille in Frankfort, Michigan. Good morning.
Good morning. I have a comment and a question. I could not agree more with so many things that Professor Paglia is saying. And because of that, I was raised in a classical Italian-American home where we weren't told about these things necessarily right away, but we just saw them all around and then later began to learn about many of these things. As a result, perhaps, I chose to become a Waldorf teacher, and I think it's about time people understood that Waldorf schools, the teachers, have to be trained in all of these things, not so much because they're going to start teaching them right away, but because they have to bring into the classroom a way for the children to have an experience of art. They do art, and it's integrated into the curriculum. And they do this so that later it kind of gives them a language, a vocabulary of experience, that later they do learn about the classical arts. This is all part of what Waldorf schools are about. And my question also is, I would like to know what the professor sees in the rest of the world in terms of what's happening with art.
Well, thank you very much, Camille. Could I just say that Italian Americans in general, even if they came, as my family did, from small rural towns and impoverished southern part of Italy, have a respect for art and the artists. It's part of the culture. The arts are not regarded as elite in Italy. So I always had, was trained to think of art as beautiful, as wonderful. I have a kind of reverential attitude toward art and the artists, but that is not the style of universities today, where this kind of snide cynicism toward art and the humanities are fostered. Now, I love what you're saying about the Waldorf schools. That's terrific that art is built into the curriculum. I think that could very well be a model of for the public schools. But the situation in the world, alas, I think everywhere mass media has taken hold of every culture, including in Italy, where there's a sports fanaticism. Soccer or football is the number one thing, not new production in the arts. And I've been going to Brazil quite a bit to lecture in the last few years, and I've heard even there again, mass media has become popular culture, is causing a transition away even from the way that poetry has been so honored for centuries, coming out of the Portuguese tradition in Brazil. So I think what we have here is a world situation. The fine arts as genres of expression are indeed waning in this period of new technology.
Interesting that you mentioned how with Italian Americans or many other cultures that it was a part of, arts were a part of growing up. It was not considered elite. My grandfather, I'm Italian American too, Primo Cardin, was an artist. He painted landscapes and all sorts of things and tried to make a living at it, but he also painted street signs and that sort of thing. So he used this ability to in a trade. And he ended up also working at a gas station and as a miner once he came over to this country. But it really was, it was his trade.
Well, this is fascinating what you're saying. I would also like to add about Italian-American culture is that, and I observed this in the introduction to Glittering Images, that, that for Italians, the crafts are also a vehicle of personal expression and of skill. The way my relatives would rest after coming home from the shoe factory, okay, was to make things. They would make beautiful baskets, okay, and carved wood nut bowls and steel fencing, and there was like a great attention paid, respect paid to workmanship. The crafts and the fine arts are not separated in Italian-American culture. Now, that's why I have felt very much at home at art schools, where so many of my majors are in crafts, are doing work in metals, in fibers, in ceramics, in woodworking, etc. So I think that that's another thing about American culture that needs attention. We need a revalorization of the trades. Right, right now, parents are pushing their kids toward college and bankrupting themselves and putting their kids into debt for what? What is the end result? Okay, when they emerge with these degrees, unless they're trained in something that can provide a livelihood for them. What I'm saying is that there needs to be more respect in the United States to manual labor, that it's actually extremely satisfying to be able to work with your hands and to do things, to make things in the physical world.
We are talking with Camille Paglia. She is professor of humanities and media studies at the University of the Arts in Philadelphia. She is the author of Glittering Images, A Journey Through Art from Egypt to Star Wars. And we're talking about the state of the arts today in America and what can be done to reinvigorate the arts and the art world. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Wondering if you'd like to talk about the arts. Are you an arts educator? How did you learn about art in school? What do you think could be done to make the arts more accessible to the general public? We welcome your thoughts and questions. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Stay tuned. Kathleen Dunn is with you after 9 o'clock. How do foreign journalists and international readers look at our election? Coming up after 9, Kathleen Dunn and her guest will talk about The View from Beyond the Border. That's coming up here on the Ideas Network. We're talking about how to save the fine arts with Camille Paglia. And our next caller is Sherry in Lake Geneva. Hi, Sherry.
Hi, Joy. The first thing I want to say is thank you so much for doing this show to elevate awareness of the arts and humanities in our culture. And imagine my joy. I'm on my way to teach my humanities class when I heard your show come on.
Good.
So I have a bounce in my step as I go into my classroom today. But I just want to thank Professor Paglia, too, because she's just speaking my voice. And the whole notion about the chronology that's lacking and the understanding of history is absolutely right on the money. And when I teach my humanities class from a chronological point of view, it starts with the Renaissance and goes up to the present day. And to see these students, understand the meaning of the art and the spiritual value of the art, and to connect with that, and to be able to love this old art that they probably never knew that existed, or they'd never really looked at it. It's just really, really rewarding. And my class is an elective class, but I wish it were required as well, as Professor Paglia is saying. But I mean, it's just so very, very important, and I'm just so glad that you're doing this show, and I hope that you'll do others. And the last comment I wanted to make is that my heart is in this so much. I'm a part-time instructor, so I've started a business called Mind Your Muse, and I'm trying to do coaching to people to listen to their inner voice, to listen to the creative voice, and find out what they can still do in their life, regardless of their age, to really, commit to their creative voice and to make a difference artistically in our culture.
I'll have to look you up, Sherry. I like that idea. Thank you very much for the call. A reaction, Professor Paglia?
Well, this is so great what Sherry is saying about the need for chronology, as well as what she is attesting to, that the spiritual value of art. Yes, this is exactly the kind of language that is currently missing from the way art is taught at the college level. It's bred out of them. Graduate students would be afraid to talk in the terms that I'm doing here, and that obviously Sherry is as well. Now, see, what I am demonstrating and glittering images is this spiritual line in art, which I think is the entire creative engine of it. I'm demonstrating it even in the modern abstract artists, okay, such as Mondrian with his grid of black lines and hanging blocks of color. When I did the research for glittering images, I was shocked at how much has been suppressed in Mondrian's own words, from his letters, essays, journals. Every single thing in his work had a spiritual meaning to him. But art critics in the art world have tried to make it all about some formal, totally neutered, apolitical, something that has no inner meaning to it. And what I'm also demonstrating is Jackson Pollock's drive for spirituality. He too was a spiritual seeker. Abstraction is it's not just paint, spattered on a canvas. So we have to recover this spiritual theme, and we have to embolden young students who are going on to teach in the humanities, embolden them to be able to talk about these things without being thought to be somehow naive.
Thanks again, Sherry. We will we'll get your contact information. Maybe there is a Mind Your Muse hour in the future. Ned in Eau Claire is with us next. Hi, Ned.
Hi. I'm calling in. I agree with some of what's been said about arts education early on in the schools. I think it's really valuable. And I also value the idea of craft and learning something, making something with your hands, a material process. I think that I disagree a little bit about the avant-garde being dead. I think that art is driven by the need for expression, self-expression, and often people turn to the arts when they feel their voice is not heard in other areas within the popular culture or the mainstream culture. And so I think art is, by its nature, somewhat counterculture, and I'd be interested to hear what your guest has to say about that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. Thank you, Ned. Actually, this idea of art as oppositional, as counterculture, is fairly recent. It began in the late 18th century with Romanticism. And what I'm arguing in my work is that moment is over. The period of subversive or transgressive art has now, that mode, that gesture has outlived its purpose. And we need to return to what the majority of the history of art has been, which is basically, a celebration of its own society or of the highest aims of its own society. What I, as a career art teacher, I lament this isolation of the contemporary artists and the this heritage of this chic pose of alienation. There was a time when making an oppositional gesture in art, when doing something avant-garde, was costly. There was a price for it. You were ostracized, or you were condemned to like poverty because you couldn't sell your paintings, like the Impressionists, whose work was not shown by the Salon in Paris in the 19th century. But no more. Okay, for the last 30 years, all right, to make an avant-garde gesture. Okay. In this tired old mode, what does that get you? It gets you to be written up in the New York Times. You get a grant from the National Endowment for the Arts. You get a job at Berkeley. No, it is corrupt. The avant-garde movement, it was noble, okay, and we should respect and honor the great martyrs of it, like the abstract expressionists, many of whom died in depression, suicide in the 1950s. But now today, okay, we have artists parasitically living off that avant-garde tradition. They do not deserve, okay, the kind of honor that the truly great avant-garde painters and sculptors won, okay, by their own sacrifices.
I'm Joy Cardine talking with Camille Paglia. She is author of Glittering Images, A Journey Through Art from Egypt to Star Wars. And speaking of Star Wars, you think that George Lucas is the world's greatest living artist in any field. Why?
Well, George Lucas was not part of my original plan for Glittering Images, but when I came down to my final chapters and was looking for strong examples of contemporary art to end my book with after those 3,000 years of masterpieces and all kinds of major works, I found that there was such derivativeness, you know, everywhere. I was becoming very frustrated. And as it happens, I was relaxing by watching TV, and I was noticing being run end-to-end the Star Wars series on Spike TV again and again and again. And slowly, I became obsessed with the grand finale of the last film made in the Star Wars series by George Lucas, released in 2005. The Revenge of the Sith finale, which is takes place on a volcano planet. And that's the subject of my final chapter of my book, because I think it is amazing. It is grand opera. It is apocalyptic nature painting. It is incredibly emotional in this longest duel ever filmed in the, you know, the history of movies. It moves on through horror, you know, to the construction of Darth Vader, the death in, you know, in childbirth of Natalie Portman bearing the twins Luke and Leia, and then this incredible manipulation of tone so that we end as the separated twins are delivered to their adoptive parents on distant planets and so on. I think it is amazing. I think, and I am serious about this, I think that the finale of Revenge of the Sith is the most emotionally compelling and significant work in the arts in the last 30 years. And people who dismiss this have simply not studied that finale as I have, okay, for a number of years, and researched the way it was done with a combination of computer animation, live action, and amazing model making, which is itself, you know, makes a claim, you know, to be considered as part of the history of installation art. So I think that George Lucas, with his world impact, okay, is unquestionably, okay, the most significant artist on the scene right now. There's just no one in any of the other arts who's had this kind of deep effect on millions and millions and millions of people across the world.
We have William on Facebook who writes, "Who decides what art is? Art has a long and lustrous history of not being accepted by the mainstream. It often pushes boundaries which make people uncomfortable. Just because you're offended by a crucifix in a urine jar doesn't mean it's not art. And computer-aided design, web design, electronic music composition, and other non-traditional mediums are also art." So that's what William says. What do you say to that?
Well, this is a new idea that has been introduced here. It has nothing to do with what we've been talking about. I have never at any moment said something is art or not art, not for one moment in today's show. However, we can say that there are questions of quality. There is good art, which lasts. There is mediocre art, and there is poor art. I'm sorry. I think that if you familiarize yourself with the whole of art, of the world's artistic production, that you are perfectly justified in saying this is really a third or fourth-rate work. And Andre Serrano's Piss Christ was not a strong work of art. I love sacrilegious art that is of a top quality. I mentioned in the introduction to my book that there's a painting by Salvador Dali from the early 1950s whose title is so pornographic I will not say it on air, but it is a parody of the Annunciation that's absolutely hilarious. It is of the top quality. But again, to say that that all art, all important art, has been transgressive or is oppositional is, again, this is misinformed, seriously misinformed and parochial. Get out of this ghetto that you're in, okay? You're in a mental ghetto to imagine that all important art in the history of the world has been oppositional. It's only a tiny portion of it, okay? And the great works of avant-garde art are in the past. We're not living in that period anymore. People cannot go on with this endless, conventional, received opinion, this sort of knee-jerk attitude that everything important flies in the face, okay, of mainstream society and insults mainstream society. That is a recipe, you know, for claustrophobia and in the death of art.
Our next caller is Kim in Milwaukee. Hi, Kim.
Hi.
Yes.
Hi. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead, Kim.
That's awkward. Hi, I was just calling because I wanted to say that she was talking about crafts earlier, and I kind of wanted to just mention the craft subculture of things like Etsy and Pinterest that has like a DIY and or do-it-yourself and craft section, and there's things like Craft Gawker. And I think that when she says that, you know, crafts aren't appreciated anymore, like I sort of feel like I sort of feel like I just needed to acknowledge things like the craft.
Yeah. So, Kim, what do you craft?
Well, I do knitting and crocheting mostly, but I mean, I get together with actually an Etsy craft party once a month, and we do all sorts of different things. Mostly, people will just bring their own things, but jewelry, beading, things like that. That's really cool.
All right. Thank you for sharing that. Is that does that fit into this, Professor Paglia?
Oh yes. I think this, as I said, no, I said there's been a great crafts revolution. I think the crafts are thriving, actually. They certainly are thriving at my school, the University of the Arts, you know, in Philadelphia. And there's there is an important feminist magazine, Bust Magazine, also, since the 90s, that has been very much part of this revival of interest in knitting and crocheting. I've had male students in my classroom who've done demonstrations of their interest in this and so on. No, what I was saying earlier was that as a career choice, okay, the crafts are undervalued. In the period since World War II, there's been this sense that all bright students must go on to college and so on. I think that you know, it was a time when only a fraction of students, you know, were college bound in the old, you know, elite era. And I think it's time to question the value of what is being taught to students in colleges, and for there to be a revalorization of the trades and the crafts, and to allow middle class parents not to be so obsessed, okay, with what are the neighbors going to say? My son or daughter is not going on to college, but just wants to do something with his or her hands, right? I think that, yes, handicraft is very noble, goes back thousands of years. But here's the other thing, is that in the crafts, the problem with crafts materials is they tend to be fragile, okay, or they tend to be costly, like gold and silver, so that it is difficult to make, let's say, monumental statements in the arts, in the crafts field, because again, you know, like speaking here about knitting and crocheting, you can make, there are wonderful giant, you know, web work sculptures where people can wander into them. There's kind of installation spaces. I mean, there's quite a tradition of that, actually, in the arts in the last several decades. But again, these are not, it's not permanent. These things are not going to last, let's say, as long as the broken artifacts from ancient Egypt made out of granite and stone.
Yeah, and let me jump in, because we have less than a minute to go, Professor Paglia. What do you want the takeaway from glittering images to be? What is your hope?
I want for people to be overwhelmed, a conversion experience about the beauty and the spiritual dimension of art.
Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you so much, Joy.
Camille Paglia, Professor of Humanities and Media Studies at the University of the Arts in Philadelphia, author of Glittering Images, A Journey Through Art from Egypt to Star Wars. Thanks to Cynthia Schuster for producing this program. Thanks to Amanda Magnus for on-air production and to Bill Martins for on-air direction. And thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come, and I hope you join us tomorrow at this time when we will be talking with Richard Lederer, your word friend. Well, we're not going to be talking about language tomorrow, but we're going to be talking about presidents. Richard Lederer has a book on presidential trivia, and we'll present a few of those presidential trivia questions to you tomorrow between 8 and 9. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.